Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. The Area Agency on Aging for Southwest Florida has been serving the community for four decades now. Their anniversary is actually today. The nonprofit serves people over 60 and adults with disabilities in Charlotte, Collier, DeSoto, Glades, Hendry, Lee, and Sarasota counties. And sometime this week, the agency anticipates picking up the phone on its elder helpline for the 500,000th time. Kirsten O'Donnell is the Director of Communications for the Area Agency on Aging for Southwest Florida, and she's with us now to talk about the milestone and how they plan to observe the half millionth call. Kirsten, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Julie. Thank you.
And as always, if you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a call. The number is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. And on Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Kirsten, like many things, few know of an organization until they find themselves in need of its services. So can you familiarize our listeners with what the Area Agency on Aging for Southwest Florida does?
Absolutely, because I feel the same way. Before I started working here a year ago, I really didn't know what this agency did or the possibilities that it provided to the community. So the Area Agency on Aging performs three main functions. The first one is kind of more of a governmental financial function, and that's we oversee the distribution of government, whether it's federal or state funds, for home and community-based elder care services. The second main thing that we do is operate the elder helpline, and that's really, I think, if people know us, that's why they know us, is the elder helpline. And the elder helpline is a toll-free service that operates kind of like a 211. But then we also provide some direct services to the community as well. So we kind of have our fingers in a lot of different pies.
So I've called in before when researching for a story, and it is one long list of events and services that greet people when they call in. So there's no question there's a lot going on, but what does the Elder Helpline, how does that fit into the whole picture? You said it's one of the biggest parts. Why is that?
Well, the Elder Helpline is actually part of a national program called the Elder Care Locator. And essentially, it's an information and referral service. So the helpline, there's a statewide helpline. There are 11 regional area agencies on aging. Obviously, we're one of them. And we each kind of operate our own helpline but share a database of providers. So people may call us, for a variety of reasons, honestly. Sometimes people call us simply because, you know, they're looking for an elder law attorney, and they don't know who to call. In some ways, we're kind of like a Yellow Pages for folks in that respect.
Kind of like an old school Google.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. But sometimes people call us with you know, much more significant issues. You know, my mother had a fall, and she's out of the hospital, and I don't know where to turn to get some services for her. What do I do to get some meals delivered to her? Are there government-funded services? Are there nonprofit services? Are there, fee-based services that are available for people, and that's kind of where we operate. You know, we will help find services kind of all varieties, whether it is those home and community-based services, or whether it's just somebody calling because they're looking for a good volunteer organization that has a lot of older volunteers and kind of everything in between.
I'm wondering if you get a lot of calls from adult children of older people that are out of state, that are looking for local services that maybe their parents may not, feel inclined to call and ask about.
Absolutely. We do receive a lot of calls from out of state. I think about probably 90% of our calls come within this area, you know, within the seven counties that we cover. But we do get, quite a good number of callers from out of state. And like you said, a lot of adult children who, they'll call their parents, and their parents will say, no, everything's fine, I'm doing fine, because people don't want to bother their children with those issues, right?
Yeah, and we've talked a lot before about elder self-neglect.
Yes, it's a very significant issue, and I think that's part of it. You know, people don't want to reveal, of course, that maybe there are a few issues that are wrong because they don't want to bother people with it. And then that can snowball definitely into neglect, self-neglect. You know, we hear the phrase elder abuse, and we think obviously physical abuse, but neglect and self-neglect are actually two of the largest parts of what's considered abusive behavior. If people can't take care of themselves, and especially because there are programs out there to help folks.
Yeah, there's, you know, and it's also taking care of a spouse. Sometimes it can get to be too much when both of the people are getting older and things like that. It's a tough one. Do you get a lot of people calling in asking you to go check on their mom or dad because they're worried about them? Or do you have people call in asking for someone to maybe, you know, just go spend a half hour with them?
We do get some folks asking for, well, especially, of course, after Irma, we had a lot of people contacting us and saying, hey, do you know about my mother? And you know, unfortunately, we don't necessarily have up-to-date information on, you know, every single person in the area, but we, you know, try and connect them with the resources, with the folks who can kind of do a well-being check on someone, absolutely.
We're talking a lot about the calls and the callers and things, but I'm wondering about who are the people that man these phone lines?
Oh, my goodness. So, believe it or not, we are on pace for 70,000 calls this year, a little over 70,000, actually. And for the most part, that's taken care of by four people, if you can believe it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty unreal. And I couldn't do their job. I can tell you that right now. They are incredibly patient folks because a lot of times people will call, but they know they need something, but they don't know exactly what it is they need. So a lot of it is just kind of asking maybe some probing questions, you know, to see if there is an opportunity to provide someone with a service. You know, somebody might call us for, you know, they received a shutoff notice on their utility bill, and they're looking for a program to pay for that. But we want to be able to ask a couple of follow-up questions to see if maybe there are some other issues, you know, that we can point them to a resource for as well. Because let's face it, if you can't pay your utility bill, there's probably other issues going on as well.
Yeah, that's probably not the only problem you're facing. So these are kind of like almost kind of investigators / counselors.
A little bit, yeah. And the great part is because we also perform the assessments to get on the state's wait list for government-funded services, you know, we can offer that right then. We can say, you know, if you are in need and you think you're going to need some services, let's schedule an assessment. We can have somebody call you and do one of those assessments, see how you're doing, and get you on that list. You know, the funding might not be available this month or next month, but if we can get you on the list when that funding comes available, we can get you some more help, and it's something you won't have to pay for.
And so we're looking at the possibility of having the half millionth call sometime this week. It's Wednesday. Has that happened yet?
I have not checked the official numbers, but it should have probably happened yesterday afternoon. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's a lot of calls. That's a lot of phone calls.
It is. And we've only been operating the helpline here at the area agency. It's been around a lot longer. We've actually only been operating it since 2003. It used to be done on a county-by-county basis across the state. And, you know, at some point the state kind of looked at it and said, hey, we could probably do this a little more efficiently if we could centralize it a bit at least. So that's why we have kind of these regional sites now that do it.
If you're just joining the show, I'm talking with Kirsten O'Donnell. She's the Director of Communications for the Area Agency on Aging for Southwest Florida, which is celebrating its 40th anniversary today. The nonprofit serves people over 60 and adults with disabilities in Charlotte, Collier, DeSoto, Glades, Hendry, Lee, and Sarasota counties. Have you or someone you love turned to the organization over the past four decades? If so, give us a call to add your thoughts to our conversation at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. So the Area Agency on Aging has been in our area at least for 40 years, and I'm wondering if things have changed over the last 40 years, because the reason I ask is aging itself seems to have changed, because the expectations of a 65-year-old today is going to be different from the expectations of someone back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I mean, people are living a lot longer, first of all. I mean, I know when I was a kid, they said, you know, the average life expectancy was 74, and if you had a relative that lived into their 90s, that was something that was really, really special, right? Now we see that all the time, and we see people who live very vibrant lives well into their 90s and sometimes even beyond. You know, on the other hand, of course, there are people who don't go through the aging process as quite as well. So we really see a wide variety of ages in people that we serve. We see a wide variety of, you know, healthfulness in the people that we serve. And that's one of the reasons, actually, why we offer some health and wellness programming, is because we want to make sure that people can stay, you know, healthy and secure. Our whole goal is to ensure that people can age safely and as independently as possible, and if possible, in their own homes and communities, because there aren't a whole lot of people who want to leave their home when they get older. They would like to age in place and not go to a nursing facility, not go to a home. We want to, you know, try and provide people with whatever services they can to live at home comfortably and safely for as long as they can.
And I'm wondering about the geographic spread here. I mean, do you have a lot of services that end up being offered in Glades, Hendry, and DeSoto County? Maybe more services offered, particularly in that area where there aren't as many things around?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, Lee, Sarasota, Collier are our three biggest counties, so we do offer a lot of programming there. But, you know, even in those small counties, like right now, we have a wellness class going on in DeSoto County. It's a class called the Arthritis Foundation Exercise Program, and it essentially is an exercise class that we offer. I'm not sure if it's two times or three times a week for about 8 weeks. People come and learn how to exercise in a way that is less painful, that is better for their joints. Because, you know, if you have arthritis, if it hurts to exercise, guess what you're going to do? You're going to stop exercising.
You're going to barely move.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And exercise is actually one of the best things you can do to, you know, keep those joints loose and fluid and keep yourself healthy, and also ward off some of those other health conditions that older people are more susceptible to if they're sedentary. So we offered a walk with ease class, which is also an arthritis class in DeSoto County. People liked it so much, they said, well, sign us up for the next class. So, you know, we've got some activities going on in those counties, definitely.
Yeah, I would imagine so. But and you serve not only people over 60, but some people with disabilities too?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are what the state refers to as an aging and disability resource center. So as part of the state's initiative, we perform, of course, the assessments for Medicaid and Medicaid programs throughout the state. And, of course, people who are eligible for Medicaid aren't just seniors. They are folks who have disabilities as well. And, you know, the helpline, obviously, is open to anyone. But those services that we can hook people up with in the state are not just for folks with disabilities.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we've had people from your organization on the show to talk about is mental health in older people.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the challenges that older people face that we may not be as cognizant of as we should be?
You know, I think one of the biggest ones, and it's not necessarily a mental health issue, but it's an overall issue, is just the issue of isolation. You know, as we get older, obviously we lose friends, we lose family members who are our peers and our age. And you know, if you don't have friends and maybe you lose your transportation, you aren't getting out a whole lot. And you know, social isolation isn't just loneliness. It isn't just feeling alone. A lot of people can be very happy if they're alone, but it's also, you know, not getting the physical interaction that you should. It's not getting the health care that you should. It's, you know, if you don't have anyone to turn to, you're more likely to be taken advantage of. So social isolation is an issue that a lot of people really aren't aware of. You just think, oh, well, you know, they go to the senior center. And a lot of folks don't go to the senior center. They're at home, they're alone, and they're vulnerable.
Well, it's interesting, too, because you have that conundrum of people want to stay in place and age at home, but sometimes doing that can lead to isolation, whereas,
absolutely,
you know, aging in an assisted living facility or an independent living facility would have more opportunities for the social interaction. However, that's just not an option for everyone.
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct.
Yeah. What can people do? I mean, what does it take for people to try to make that not be such an issue for older people in our area?
Oh, gosh, that's a million-dollar question, Julie.
Because nobody likes to hear about that happening, and everybody wants to help, but what can we do?
You know, I think a lot of it is, you know, checking in on your older relatives, on your older neighbors, on your older friends. You know, sometimes people are a little scared to approach older people. I don't know if it's because it's, you know, forces us to face our own, you know, the fact that we may be aging as well, or maybe it's just that we're afraid we don't have something in common with them. But honestly, you know, you probably have an older relative or an older neighbor or an older acquaintance or coworker or former coworker that would love to just get a phone call. And, you know, one of our partner agencies or our lead agencies, the Friendship Centers, offers a program called Friendship at Home, which essentially does that. They make phone calls. And just check in with people and say, hey, how's it going? What's new in your life? Even little things like that, you know, it can make a big difference.
Maybe in honor of the 40-year anniversary of the Area Agency on Aging, all of our listeners can maybe try to maybe find someone that's near them and just make that call and kind of make a commitment to reach out.
I think that's a fantastic idea. I love that.
I want to ask about contacts for your organization. How do people get a hold of you?
Well, the best way to get a hold of us is through that elder helpline that we talked about a little bit. The helpline number is 866-413-5337, or the way I always remember it is 866-41-ELDER. And we've got folks at the elder helpline 5 days a week from 8 to 5 ready to answer those questions that you may have, whether it's, you know, trying to get services or, you know, just trying to find out what's out there in the community.
And I'm wondering about volunteer opportunities there. That might be another way for people to continue to stay engaged and build a bit of a network, perhaps. Are there volunteer opportunities there?
There are. Our two biggest volunteer opportunities are two of our outreach programs. One of them is our health and wellness program. We have a few dozen volunteers who lead classes like Walk with Ease and the Arthritis Foundation program, Tai Chi, you know, wellness classes to, you know, assist people in aging healthfully.
Yeah.
Our other program is the Shine Medicare Counseling Program. And that is a program that provides free, unbiased, one-on-one counseling to Medicare beneficiaries to make sure that they're getting the plans that will meet their needs, and, you know, making sure that when they're getting billed correctly, you know, whatever it might be. And I know that sounds a little scary. You know, you say, wow, that's a lot of big stuff that you're doing with people. There's actually an amazing training program for Shine. You know, we're not just throwing people out there and saying, hey, go help this person. It's a multiple module. I just went through the program. It's intense.
You're too trained before you're allowed to go out and start dispensing actual advice.
Absolutely, yeah. And there is ongoing training in the program. We actually have about 70 volunteers that assist with that program, and we can always use more because we had about 9,500 people get assistance through that program. So the more volunteers we have, the better off we are.
Yeah, and again, that's another thing that people don't really know how to navigate until they have to, right?
Well, yeah, most people don't understand Medicare until the stuff starts coming in the mail around the time you turn 65, and it can be pretty eye-opening.
And I'm wondering, how are you funded? Are donations of goods or services ever needed, or are you funded through the state?
The majority of our funding comes through state and federal grants, so the Older Americans Act, for example, home care for the elderly, community care for the elderly. But in a lot of ways, those funds are kind of passed through into the actual, you know, programs and services that are provided. We do also accept donations, and we have something that we call the Agnes Leighton Unmet Needs Fund. And what that is, you know, sometimes people will call us with a need. They call the helpline, and there just isn't anything available in their community to meet that need. You know, if it's something that we can provide in some way, we may turn to the Agnes Leighton Fund, look at it and say, okay, well, you know, an example of this would be fairly recently we had somebody call and they had a significant water heater issue. They didn't have hot water in their home, and you know, that can be a health issue. There weren't any programs in their neighborhood or in their county that could provide them with that. So, you know, we dip into the Agnes Leighton Fund and try and help them with those issues.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, that's all the time that we have for this part of the show today, but I want to say congratulations on 40 years and your 500,000th call. That's great. And also to thank my guest, Kirsten O'Donnell. She's the Director of Communications for the Area Agency on Aging for Southwest Florida. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Julie.
When we return, there's a new partnership between Coastal Conservation Association Florida, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, and Moat Marine Laboratory to address the loss of the snook population on the southwest coast as a result of red tide. The plan is to raise thousands of baby snook to release into Gulf waters once the red tide bloom has subsided. We'll talk with CCAF's Executive Director next. I'm Julie Glenn, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.